Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
This week on Unforgotten.
This week, as of April 2nd of 2025, marks 9 years since Rakeem Samuel's senseless murder in 2016. Rakeem's mother, Erica Davis, contacted us and asked if we would help her recognize and remember him. And we were more than happy to help. So we were going to have a quick conversation and play last season's episode, one of our very first episodes, with Rakeem being featured, turned into a wonderful but longer conversation. And we're going to share that conversation with you now.
Hey everyone, this is Sellers.
And this is Stormy.
And this is Unforgotten,
where each episode will highlight unsolved missing, murdered, and suspicious death cases in Alabama in order to raise awareness and hopefully obtain some answers for victims and their families.
Please remember that any individual referenced in the podcast should be considered innocent until found guilty in a court of law, and any opinions or views expressed in the podcast are solely those of participants. Listener discretion is advised, as some of the content discussed in the podcast may contain violence or graphic descriptions and may not be suitable for all audiences.
And now for our Unforgotten Rewind, Rakeem Samuels and an interview with his mother, Erica Davis.
Hey guys, and welcome back. This week, we wanted to touch on a case that we have already talked about in a previous episode, and that is the case of Rakeem Samuel.
So before we bring our special guest on, we're going to go ahead and play the clip from Season 1, Episode 2, Rakeem Samuel. Rakeem was only 20 years old when he went missing from Montgomery on April 2nd, 2016. His mother, Erica Davis, describes him as a well-mannered young man who had never been in trouble. He was smart, kind, and respectful.
He was a well-mannered young man, never been in trouble, probably had a speeding ticket. I think he was a young person in an old man's body. His wisdom was just out of this world. And
based on the pictures I've seen, he was always smiling. I've learned something recently, too, that Rakeem was a wrestler in high school. I've watched some of those matches, and those take grit. So he must have been pretty tough, too.
And Rakeem was also a hard worker. He very rarely showed up late or missed a day of work. In fact, on the morning of April 2nd in 2016, Rakeem finished up his night shift at Glovis, which is a company that makes Hyundai vehicles, and then he returned to his mother's home.
Erica was getting ready to attend a friend's wedding in Tuskegee when he arrived, and she recalls Rakeem being in just a pleasant mood when he got in. While Erica finished getting dressed, Rakeem cooked the two of them breakfast, and after they ate, he walked her out to the car and told her goodbye. I mean, he sounds like a genuinely good-hearted, thoughtful person. And knowing what comes next, this sounds like one of those times that you just want to hold on to for a little bit longer.
It is. It's absolutely heartbreaking. Rakim called Erica after she left, complaining of body aches. She, as a good mother would do, told him where the Epsom salt was located if he wanted to take a hot bath. And unfortunately, this was the last time Erica ever heard her son's voice.
I also want to talk about Erica Davis for a moment, because this is one strong mama. If you haven't watched her interview with Crime Door or listened to her interview with Tawana Spann on Missing Our Voice podcast, you should. The links are in our episode description. Erica's household was a tight ship. If you were living under her roof, whether you were 10 or 20, you were abiding by her rules, which meant being at home by curfew and not a minute later. You kept your phone charged and you answered if she called you.
I'm sure kids, especially teenagers, would groan or try to push their boundaries, and maybe her children did on occasion. But from what it sounds like, Erica raised some pretty respectful kids who really did honor her rules.
That's exactly what it sounds like, because this set a routine and expectations. So when Erica called Rakim on her way home from the wedding around 8 p.m. and his phone went straight to voicemail, she knew something was off.
Not to mention that thing about a mother's intuition, it always seems to be spot on.
That is a real thing.
Yep.
With Rakim not answering, Erica thought maybe his phone battery had died and he just had forgotten to put it on the charger. Or maybe there were some cell service issues. So she continued calling in hopes that he would pick up the phone. But then she got home and he wasn't there.
While Rakim wasn't home, Erica's sister was there and told her that Rakim had been picked up earlier in the day by a female coworker to run some errands since his car was in the shop. Her sister thought it was odd that the young lady didn't pull up in front of the house or the driveway and instead parked slightly down from the front of the house.
As time continued to creep up on Rakim's midnight curfew, Erica reminded herself that he still had a few minutes before she really needed to start questioning his whereabouts. However, the routines and expectations she'd built for her children were broken when her calls that evening had repeatedly gone straight to voicemail and her concern was steadily growing.
When she continued to receive Rakim's voicemail and he hadn't returned home by midnight, she called Rakim's father to see if he had heard anything. He had told her not to worry, just give Rakim time. He'd probably be home soon. But throughout the following day, Erica continued trying to contact Rakim with no luck. She contacted family members, hoping that maybe they had seen or spoke with him, but they hadn't. She also called his father again, at which point his father made the decision to travel from his home in Bruton to Montgomery.
That afternoon, while Erica was in her driveway vacuuming out her car, she was approached by the friend who had picked Rakim up on Saturday. She asked to see Rakim so she could give him back his cell phone charger, which she was holding. Later, when looking back on this moment, Erica recalled the young woman was holding the charger as though she didn't really want to touch it.
After Erica informed Rakim's friend that he wasn't home, his friend went on to say that after lunch, she had taken Rakim to one of his classmates' homes, and then she took him to meet up with another Glovis worker at Walmart on Eastern Boulevard around 1:30 p.m. She said that Rakim had planned to return to her house later and pick up some, quote, things he had left there.
Erica was certain something was terribly wrong when Rakim had still not returned by Monday, April 4th, 2016. Taking a more proactive approach, she contacted her phone provider, explained what was going on, and requested the last numbers Rakim had any communication with, whether it was through phone call or text. When she called the number she'd been given, a female answered the phone.
Hello?
That female turned out to be the same coworker friend who picked up Rakim on Saturday. Erica stated the young woman broke down into tears when she learned Erica was calling in search of Rakim. When Erica asked why she was so upset, the young woman explained that when she dropped off Rakim at Walmart, he had gotten into a black four-door Nissan Versa with a male coworker and another man who was someone that Rakim didn't know. Considering the friend Erica was talking to was the last person she knew for sure had seen Rakim, she insisted the friend meet her at Montgomery Police Department and give them the same information for the missing person report.
After filing the report and leaving the police station, Rakim's friend tells Erica that Rakim's backpack was still at her house, which was something Erica says the friend failed to mention to her or the police.
Well, that makes you kind of wonder, if she had the backpack the entire time, why not return it at the same time she returned the charger?
Right. Well, I don't really understand why you would only bring back one of his things. If you were returning his belongings, why wouldn't you bring everything?
Right.
Erica and the young woman returned to Erica's home after filing the report. With the help of Erica's family, they began poring over Rakim's call and text logs, calling any numbers they didn't recognize to see if they had heard from Rakim in the last several days.
They even went by the classmate's home to see if Rakim was there or if the classmate had spoken to him again. According to Erica, the young woman who had picked up Rakim had begun to act somewhat nervous and abruptly stated she needed to leave, which in turn made Erica a little hesitant to reach out to her again.
I can't say that I blame her. We don't know the name of the friend that picked Rakim up, and we're not saying she has anything to do with his disappearance. There could have been a number of reasons she didn't want to be involved. Maybe she was concerned for her own safety. Or maybe she did know more than she wanted to share. But as a mother, if the last person who saw one of my children wasn't at all inclined to help search for them, I think it would raise some red flags for me too. And I'd probably just let the investigators handle that.
Right. You don't want someone who may be withholding information from you, potentially relaying what you know or where you're searching to people who maybe are involved.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's just better. Yeah. Sometimes it's just better to limit your contact to the people you know you can trust.
And, you know, at this point, he's missing. So they're hoping somebody has talked to him. And if they're keeping him from being able to contact his family intentionally, you don't want to be talking to somebody that's like, hey, by the way, here's where they're at. You need to, like, move him.
Right. Over the next 90 days, Erica, along with family, friends, and coworkers, diligently and relentlessly searched any and all areas they could get to for any sign of Rakim.
Now, there's something Erica has said that's just so disheartening. Not long after Rakim's disappearance, she asked the investigator handling his case if his name and a photo or something could be shown on the news just to help get the word out. And she was told that it would be a violation of his rights to do that. And that is just so hard for me to even wrap my mind around, because it wasn't like that was just unheard of. We just heard about all the work the Opelika Police Department put into finding baby Jane Doe's identity to give her back her name, to give Amor back her name.
Right. And I mean, how many times have you seen law enforcement release a picture to the general public in search of a person? I mean, it almost happens immediately most of the time.
And then there's age progression photos that
right.
come out.
So I don't know what this is about at all. It kind of blows my mind that they would even say that.
Yeah. And there was actually, if you go listen to her interview with Tawana Spann, you'll get a good feeling for what I was talking about earlier about the kind of mom that Erica is. Because she says, you know, she told him, what rights? You know, like, she was so mad about it. Like, you know, we don't have locked doors in our house. We don't keep secrets. It blew her mind that they were not going to let her put this on
crazy.
The news. And
right.
anyway.
Yeah. I think the public and media are underused resources. I mean, getting a name out to the public and a face out to the public quickly gives the agencies more eyes scanning surroundings.
And it costs nothing. Thankfully, it does seem like agencies are utilizing news outlets and social media platforms more frequently to quickly disseminate information now. According to the September 7th, 2022 WSFA case file on Rakim, cell phone records led investigators to a wooded area in the 300 block of Hopper Street in Montgomery on June 30th, 2016, where Rakim's remains were found, almost 3 months after his disappearance. His phone has never been recovered. Rakim's death is considered a homicide. However, the cause of death has been classified as undetermined. To date, no person of interest has ever been named related to Rakim's disappearance.
The cell phone records and Walmart surveillance video seem to indicate that the person responsible for Rakim's death is someone he knew and worked with, at least according to Erica.
One of those co-workers who helped search for Rakim was Nanette Thomas, who was Rakim's team lead at Glovis. On April 6th, she went to visit with Erica and told her she would continue to search for Rakim and ask around at work to see if any of the employees had heard anything or seen anything.
But on April 8th, just days after Rakim's disappearance, Nanette's family received a phone call from her supervisor advising that she had not been to work in a couple of days, which was not at all like her. Nanette had always been a loyal worker with regular attendance, so her absence was very concerning.
When attempts to contact Nanette were unsuccessful, her family immediately went to her East Elk Road apartment, but she wasn't home, and nothing seemed to be out of order. Concerned about her safety, her family went to Montgomery Police Department and filed a missing person report.
And despite the fact that Nanette's disappearance occurred just 6 days after Rakim's, and that they both worked at Glovis on the same team, Montgomery PD has indicated that they do not think that there's a connection between the two. I'm not sure why.
And family members aren't really sure why either. Erica told Jasmine Williams with WSFA that she felt the two cases were connected.
They work on the same line. That was his team leader. I truly feel like they're connected because I know what she told me before leaving my home.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
There's a lot of pressure to wear the right clothes for every situation, but the clothes don't make the man. With Mack Weldon, you can build a wardrobe that looks polished in any setting and tells the world you stay you wherever you go. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 25% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MACKWELDON.com. Promo code MACK25.
We have Rakim's mother, Miss Erica Davis, who is probably one of the strongest mothers I have ever spoken to.
Oh.
You are an inspiration for one, but I hope that I am half the mom that you are, because
thank you so much.
You are just truly wonderful. Fighting for Rakim, and then the way that you have raised your children to just be respectful and kind. And I just want you to know that you are killing it in the mom world.
Yeah.
I thank you so much. I can't take all the credit. And once again, I got to give the credit to the Lord. You know, without his guidance and without, you know, standing his word and standing on what his word says and trusting God, that has helped me not only raised my boys. I had a sister that passed, and I took in her 5 girls, and
oh, Erica.
I had custody of my younger sister kids. So I had, like, at the time, maybe 10 kids in a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house, and I was the only one working at the time. So it was before Rakim's death. But through it all, through my sister passing that January, my father passing that September, Rakeem missing that April, I truly must give honor to him for his grace and mercy, because that actually kept me and my focus mind, helped me to not only, although I suffer from depression, but I had to fight through it. Mm. I had to fight through it because I had little people that was dependent on me. Mm-hmm. And my sister used to tell me all the time, she said, "You're a strong woman." And I didn't understand what she was saying. But now that I see everything, all the low valleys that I went through and all the high valleys that I went through, I understand mm-hmm. now. I understand. I myself sometimes think I'm not a strong person. And I thank you both for saying that, because I don't see it in myself. But yes, I just got to give honor to God, honor to God.
You know, the other thing that you do so well is, you don't forget that there's others out there fighting like you are, and some that are not knowing how to fight like you have so far. So you've been really supportive of other families out there too. Great job and wonderful. You're just wonderful.
That's what I told him that I would do, because I was like, oh my God, you have placed all this in my lap. If you will just keep me, I will do what you have called me to do. I will do it. So therefore, I can't be selfish. I have to look out for others, because other mothers, other parents have gone through what I've went through. And we need someone. We have to call on someone that has the same symptoms as I do, to where we're talking the same language. Because when I go talk to, if I talk to a mother and she hasn't gone through of the loss of a child, you'll say, oh, I'm so sorry for you. But when you actually get with a mother, you all are able to connect, to understand each other language. And that's what I enjoy doing, talking to other mothers, encouraging other mothers to keep pressing, keep fighting. If you ain't got the strength, hey, let me know. I'll help. I don't mind, because we're, like I said last year, we're here on this world to help each other.
And it's a heavy burden for somebody to try to carry alone.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
You just don't understand.
I think all the time, like if something were to happen to my kids, I imagine I would be sleeping on the doorstep of the police department. Mm-hmm. Talking about, like, what are we doing today? What are we doing today?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Nobody should have to do it alone.
That's right.
They always say that a parent should never have to bury a child. And that is something that I think about when we talk about cases like Rakeem's, where this is somebody's child, and everybody is somebody's child. But when it is so recent, they're so young, it just breaks my heart. And I cannot imagine having to do that by myself.
It's hard. It is hard. And if you don't have that emotional support, if you don't have that family support, you ain't got nobody but yourself and God. That's it. And after everything has ended, you've had funeral services, all the calls stop.
Mm-hmm.
And you're left to yourself to figure out, how am I going to deal with this? because they said they're going to call me and check on me. They said they was going to do this, but they're not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, you got to start, you got to get in your closet and you got to figure it out. You got to figure it out because he brought me to my knees to where I had to call on him because I knew a sister couldn't do it, brother couldn't do it, auntie couldn't do it, daddy couldn't do it, mama couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have that connection with the Father yourself. So I had to learn that. And he brought me at my knees. And I think about Psalms 51. And I said, okay, Lord, okay, I'll do what you want me to do. Okay. You got me. I put my face in your word. I put my prayers out there for you. I'll just, if you wake me up 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm up. Just like you just said, what we doing? What you want?
Mm-hmm.
If you want me to pray for 2 hours, okay, I'm going to pray.
Yep.
So that's the type of obedience I had to learn during the process of Rakeem being missing. And he was just preparing me for when they found him. He was not only preparing me. All my sisters, our kids are like brothers and sisters. And we have a young bunch of the family, the older kids, the older cousins, between myself, my oldest sister, and my baby sister. They're very protective of their younger cousins.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all they knew was to play with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because we didn't have any friends. Well, okay, we're going to have a kid day. My sister had 7 kids.
Mm-hmm.
So with my 2, that's all the play you need. That's all you need.
Y'all got enough friends.
Yeah. So
you had quite the brood. So
yeah. And I was thankful for the parents that I had. We would come up there probably on a Sunday, have Sunday dinner, and they had a plentiful enough of yard to where it was in a safe community in Bruna, Alabama. They had enough of yard. My daddy had all types of fruit trees out there for him, for his grandkids. So we just stayed around our parents and our siblings. And that's the way it continued after my sister passed. The siblings, the cousins, that bond got closer. And that's just what I surround myself with, you know. That's about it. I'm glad you told me about the proclamation. I'm like, oh my God, are you serious? I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
And
you want to read that, Carrie?
On May 24th, 2024, Mayor Stephen Reed issued a proclamation which was accepted by Pam Riley Bolden, decreeing May 25th, 2024 as Missing Persons Awareness Day in the city of Montgomery. Oh, Montgomery Fire and Rescue actually is who posted that. So that was Mr. Eddie Gaunt, the chief of operations that I was talking about earlier, that made like a great impression. He's the one that posted, not Montgomery Police Department, but Montgomery Fire and Rescue posted all the photos from this event and made the post about it being declared Missing Persons Day.
Well, you know, it's too bad that the police department didn't, the police department didn't participate like they should have, but also that the mayor didn't come and share the proclamation. But
he should have been
nice
there.
It's nice to know that there's a new police chief and there's a new DA, correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And you're meeting with them tomorrow?
I am. I got my little bad little boy over here.
All right. Well, it'll be good to see what they have to say.
Yes. I just hope it's good things, you know, because you get tired of when it's time for your updates, you get tired of hearing the same thing every time. But the only thing, they'll tell you the same thing every time, but they'll just word it differently. Mm-hmm. And that's not what I want to hear. I want to hear good things. I want to hear, okay, we're going to go this direction.
Yeah.
You know, this is what we're going to do. I need for them to tell me what they can do for my son.
Right.
As far as, you know, bringing this persons to justice, you know, in a court of law. And I always say, you know, God's timing is the best time.
Yeah.
So it's whatever his will is, you know. If I have to wait another year, hey, patience. He teaches us all patience, to have patience. So I'm willing to wait, you know. Mm-hmm.
If it means a resolution, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it means getting it the right way, you know.
Getting it the right way. Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's a great way to look at it, because I know it's difficult to look at it, especially early on. I mean, it's working on a number of years now for you and for a lot of others, but when it's fresh in your brain, that's harder to have that kind of outlook.
And you know what? I relive that day every day. Every day I play back everything in my head, every day. The only thing, the burden has gotten not so heavy, although my heart aches, but it has gotten lighter because I've learned to release it to the Father, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You can't hold stuff pent in. That's not a way of life. You have to release some things to him. So I must say, like I told you all before, I'm better now than what I was.
It takes a little time. Yeah.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
It does. It really does. It really does. And I'm just expecting greatness tomorrow, you know, to hear good things.
Yeah.
Last year when I spoke to the now DA, you know, she was very compassionate. She was like, I want to help, you know, call me. She was very eager to give me her number without me asking.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want greatness to come tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I believe in that.
Yeah. Say some good prayers before you go in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, you can go in with a little bit of ammunition. Earlier, Carrie was talking about the new grant that the Montgomery County DA's office and was it Alabama State University, I believe, of forensics. They got this $167,000 grant for helping with new DNA technology testing. Involving, you know, as I can't remember what she called it, a VAC system, something
it's
that probably
VAC.
Works with, okay, the wet VAC.
Yeah, the
similar or works with the MVAC. Yeah, probably.
I think it's going to be something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It was $176,000 grant.
That was
and,
close.
Yeah, and it's going to be utilized by multiple counties. And I think that is a huge thing. You know, we were talking about, well, you know, it's possible that it's obviously not going to be available like immediately.
Right.
But it's still, that's something that is in the works. And I think that it's great because there's so many advancements in forensic technology that Alabama, I think, is behind on, you know?
Yeah, I don't think you hear much about any new, I guess, advances. I don't know if that's the right word I want to say, but
yeah.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
So I think that is great. And here's, I think, for me, like one of the questions that I would have going into your meeting tomorrow would be, this obviously the DA is going to be there, so she can talk to like when that stuff's going to be available. But we were looking at that report, you know, about a year after we did Rakeem's first episode. We had submitted the request to Montgomery Police Department saying, hey, we want an update, all of these things. And they said, well, it's against our policy to provide that. And then almost a year later, out of the blue, we get a copy of, we get an email attaching a case report summary. And that case report summary had no identifying information. The email had no identifying information. The only way that we knew was because it had the date April 2nd, 2016. And it had 3800 Bach Eastern Boulevard. And we were like, oh, it's Rakeem. And so one, the disposition on that says exceptional clearance, which I had not really paid all that much attention to begin with, because I immediately went down to the bottom where it's talking about property and was looking to see what evidence they had. But I looked it up, and exceptional clearance, according to the FBI website, it says cleared by exceptional means. In certain situations, elements beyond law enforcement's control prevent the agency from arresting and formally charging the offender. When this occurs, the agency can clear the offense exceptionally. Law enforcement agencies must meet the following four conditions in order to clear an offense by exceptional means. The agency must have identified the offender, gathered enough evidence to support an arrest, make a charge, and turn over the offender to the court for prosecution. Identified the offender's exact location so that the suspect could be taken into custody immediately. Encountered a circumstance outside of control of law enforcement that prohibits the agency from arresting, charging, and prosecuting the offense. So it says examples of exceptional clearances include, but are not limited to, the death of the offender. And then the example of that is suicide or justifiably killed by police or citizen. That's odd wording, but
that is weird. That's like, yeah, I would think like, if they died for any
reason. How about like natural causes? I mean,
they jump into conclusion. You know,
yeah. The victim's refusal to cooperate with the prosecution after the offender has been identified, or the denial of extradition because the offender committed a crime in another jurisdiction and is being prosecuted for that offense. In the UCR, recovery of property alone does not clear an offense. Well, you know, if this case summary right here says, okay, and this just hit me just now. That disposition date is February 27th, 2017. Mm-hmm. And it says exceptional clearance, which means they had cleared that case, but no arrest was going to be made, right? Except for when we tried to get a status from Montgomery Police Department, they told us, well after 2017, it was not their policy to comment on...
See, I'm thinking, because yes. You know it went to grand jury, and they didn't get a bill.
Did it?
Yeah, it went.
So we have exceptional clearance, uh-huh. That's the disposition, and then...
Yeah, 2017.
Yep. Almost a year later. They yeah. Do you know when it went to grand jury?
I want to say probably around that time. I know it was 2017 because the DA got the case in October 2016. And probably October, January. Yep. Probably around shortly after that, it went to grand jury. But being that Narquin presented it as a robbery, didn't get a bill.
Really?
So, didn't get a bill.
That was another thing I wanted to look at, because it has also on here offenses, and then it has crime code and statutes. I wanted to look it up real quick to see what exactly those, like all other incidents, what does that mean? How many other incidents are you referring to here?
Yeah.
Exactly. I would love to know all other incidents. So, but what does that code mean? We need to know what that code means.
That's interesting. I'm seeing a criminal code of 0024Z referring to reckless endangerment.
What? Oh, okay. That is what crime code says. I wrote 242. That's why.
Reckless endangerment. Thank you for that.
So going back to your, what we were talking about earlier with the brush, you get this brush that's not Rakim's.
Mm-hmm.
Whose brush is it?
Huh. Yeah. They don't know. Well, from what I was told, we just picked it up. They had already had packaged it up. So they just went in there and found the brush and just threw it in the envelope and wrote a case number on it.
Oof. Jesus.
Oh, my heavens. Mm-hmm. And that was after you had already had the bag and gone through
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I had already looked at the brush. I know what my son had in that book bag, because I held that brush in my hand and I looked through every piece of book bag that composed of a book bag. And the stuff that they were saying, I didn't see it. Not only did my eyes look in it, his stepfather looked in it. We looked in it at the same time.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this stuff was not in my son's book bag when I gave it to Lieutenant Chapman. So did somebody down there, or did he pad my son's book bag? That's what I want to know, because I'm not understanding, you know? Because the most valuable piece of evidence that we had, he just walked up to it and walked away.
So looking at the case summary that we have, it goes down. I mean, it doesn't give us hardly any information. If we had not talked to you and had researched Rakim's case like we have, we'd have no idea who this was related to. And it's not like the cover email provided any kind of information. But we get down to property, and like the first thing that I noticed, and looking at it now, I guess it could be encompassed in one of the things, but on July 7, 2016, which is going to be around the time that Rakim's remains are found, I think, right? They have victim. Okay, so
June
30th. Weird
that
it's not listed until July 7th, but how many days is that? You know, we just, like a week later, they decide to enter this into evidence, or presumably. Somehow.
Or recorded.
It says, and okay, maybe it's because they were doing other, like, I would like to think they were working the case. And so, like, a week later, they're like, okay, we're at a spot where we can enter this. Because obviously, there are some things that are listed here that we don't know whether or not it was found at the scene. Victim property, which we aren't really sure what that is. Presumably, that's his backpack. And there's no itemization of what was in that, just victim property. There is somebody that we're not going to name just because it... Well, hell, they emailed us this in response to a public record.
Yeah, it's public.
Uh-huh.
Electronics.
Listed.
Uh-huh. Now, it's exceptional clearance, so you can kind of put together that maybe is whoever they could not arrest. But that's multiple electronics. So maybe part of the delay there was they had to go retrieve these things. You have to get warrants and you have to get things. And then dental records. So this is at, they've got the dental records on the 7th. But they're going out there telling, but they've already told you prior to that. How do they know?
The description of his clothes is what I was told, because they didn't get the dental records until he was found the 30th of June. They didn't get the dental records until the following next day. They went to Dr. Chapman's office and got Rakeem's dental records. So, they looked at his clothing from what I was told. I didn't see my son's shoes. I didn't see his shirt. I didn't see his pants. I didn't see his belt. I didn't see anything.
And you have to assume that this, there is a more detailed log somewhere that itemizes whatever the victim property is and that they have it. Surely there is some kind of more detailed information somewhere, because how, looking at this, how would you know what all you have and what you have available to for additional testing? Because they, now that they've got the district attorney's office is getting this new fantastic soft, I guess, equipment and ability and technology and all of these things, this would be a great thing to help potentially bolster their case.
Sure would.
Because it also, like, so you wonder where they get the electronics from. Then you go in September 19th, 2016, so 2 months later-ish, and they list assorted rounds and pill bottle.
And that was not in my son's book bag. I did not see any of that stuff in my son's book. That's why I'm like, and when I had this meeting with Chief Hall and Lieutenant Payne, I brought that to their attention. I was like, this stuff was not in my son's book bag. And you got a whole list of stuff. But when I gave that book bag to Lieutenant Chapman, that stuff was not in there. The only thing that was in there was his lunch bag, a face towel, his brush. That's all I seen.
Well, this doesn't even say whose pill bottle. I mean, it could be anybody's. Yeah. Was it just like a completely blank pharmacy bottle? Was it Tylenol? Was it, you know, something that you could buy over the counter? Is it prescription? Is it Rakeem's prescription?
Were the rounds in?
Yeah.
Were the rounds in the pill bottle?
Or are they talking about ammunition rounds?
Right.
Yeah.
I hope they have their description somewhere. I mean.
Yeah. Well, you know what I'm looking at? Yeah. You know what I'm looking at, though? It looks almost like they're giving you a summary of what was collected on different dates. That it isn't
necessarily connected, but are like related.
No, they're not connected at all. It's like on the 7th, this is what we listed into evidence. On the 19th, this is what we listed into evidence. So, because if you look at, it says one manila envelope containing DFS return.
So that's
so that means whatever came back from DFS.
So that's February 20th, 2019.
That's 2019.
So that's years.
Wow. Wow.
So did it take them that long to get DFS stuff? Because typically what DFS does, based on other stuff I've looked at, is you send your evidence off, which is another question.
Uh-huh.
When did you send this evidence off for processing? You send your evidence off. They get whatever DNA off of it to process, and they return the evidence back to you. They keep the DNA profiles in their system.
Yep.
But they send the agency back their original evidence. Did it take them 4 freaking years to process DNA? Or did it take them 4 flipping years to send it out?
Or did they not send it until?
Let me see.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering.
Right before, when I got fed up with the city, this was in 2016. I got fed up with the city and I was like, type up my son's case and get it to the DA's office. I want y'all hands off of it.
Mm-hmm.
Narcan had already closed my son's case without me knowing. And his,
I mean, it says he closed it right here in 2017, not even a year later.
DFAS still had, they still had they hadn't released this stuff yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I do remember that conversation. I remember that conversation. And that was, he was found in June, right before, I want to say like between August, September, they still had his book bag and stuff. The last conversation I remember having.
Well, if they close it by exceptional clearance on the 27th in 2017, on February 27th of 2017, then you would think maybe for some reason it got hung up in the lab and they didn't return it until now. Which should have been more than a manila envelope, to be honest.
Yeah, right.
But
yeah,
that's 3 years after, like almost 3 years to the day.
Yeah, he did say that they was bagged up. Yeah, he did.
But how do they close it on exceptional clearance in 2017 if they don't even have the results from the evidence?
From what Nockwin told me. Yeah, I closed it. We didn't get a bill at grand jury. I closed it. I said, so you closed it without my knowledge? I said, I truly appreciate you calling and telling me. But I had to find out from the DA's office, and I had to call you to see what your problem was. So.
February 20th of 2019 is when they get the evidence back. But they've presented it to a grand jury before then. And that's just assuming that this date on here is when they got it back. It could be any number of things, really. But if they didn't actually have the results from DFS until 2019, how do you present that to a grand jury?
Yeah. And if you presented it to the grand jury, then it still wouldn't be in at DFS. Because it would have been in the hands of,
and there should be other dates between there that says return.
Yeah. Well, you said that the officer that was with you, he forgot to do something.
No.
And that's how
after, he said they forgot something, but
yeah. After he told
that's
me
what
that,
I mean. Yeah.
I was like, no, we finna go take a look ourselves and see what's going on. I said, because something does not sound right. So I got in my car and we went down there. After they left, we went down there. And that second time, I had gloves, rain boots on, stick. Everything, I was prepared. And that's when I pulled up my child bone. And I called back and I'm like, I have my child bones. You know, what are you going to do? we don't need them.
We don't need them.
So I was like, oh, okay, this is the way they work. But if I would have known any better then, but that was a warning sign for me then.
Mm-hmm.
If I would have known any better, I would have requested that a more seasoned investigator that was more trained dealing with murder cases, which they don't want to say that his case is a murder case, which it is.
Well, and the exceptional
exactly.
clearance.
Uh-huh. So they don't want to admit to their wrongs. And I'm just tired of them. I am.
So going back to this, the sorted rounds and pill bottles obviously are very vague. Where did they find it? We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Did they find that at May's house? Did they find it where the remains were?
I would love to know. Because mm-hmm. these questions, they're not answering, because when I asked that, he looked at me like I was crazy. And I'm telling you, I know what was in that bag. And mm-hmm. when I had that meeting back mm-hmm. in December of 22, they looked at me like I was crazy. Like, we don't care what you telling us, what you seen in that book bag. We already got it on paper, so we ain't worried about it. That's the way they was looking at me. Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I am going to ask that tomorrow.
Yeah. So far, what is your understanding of the official status of
this? It's still open, being worked on.
Okay. And is it still undetermined as far as manner of death?
Yeah, you know what?
Or is it considered a homicide case?
They will not change that status, because I mentioned that to the investigator. I was like, I got the coroner to change that to probable homicide. And he was like, he said, that's not an official death certificate. I'm like, well, it says it at the top, you know?
Yeah.
The coroner researched it himself. He wanted to study the case itself, and he put probable homicide. The man that did Rakeem autopsy, he's now deceased. So I want to say, was Dr. Boudreaux? Something like that.
I think that sounds right, because I think there was a Dr. Boudreaux, but I can't remember.
Yeah, he's deceased now. So they did put probable homicide, and I'm like thinking, okay, he changed it. He's like, that does not change the manner or the cause, because everything wasn't there. And I'm saying to myself, maybe if they would have took time, they would have had everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's nothing, there was never any updates after Rakeem's case to say, we have a person of interest. We have, you know, because up to this point, as far as I know, they have never said they thought that Nanette Thomas's and Rakeem's case were connected, even though they worked together.
Yeah.
Hyundai Glovis, what are the chances that in your workplace, you got one co-worker go missing 1 week. The following week, another go missing. Please tell me
how that's not related.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. And they can feed what they want to feed out their mouth all day long, but I know what that woman said to me the day she came to my house. I know what that woman said. I know who she said she was going to go and confront. I know. And he knew her schedule because he worked with them. So he is a criminal. Ain't no older person going to think like, I done killed her in the backseat. It's a lot of blood in the car. Let me park her car in another apartment complex and take her tags off her car. Let me do that. That's domestic violence. That's a lot of work. Why not? If I'm knocking on your door and you know it's me, you open the door. Why I just won't go ahead and kill you then?
Mm-hmm.
Come on now.
As last cleanup. Honestly.
Come on now.
You just,
come on.
I mean, it seems like it would be faster for the person to get away. That at the point that they start moving a vehicle, then they're getting riskier because now they're risking being caught in this vehicle, taking things off of it. All of these things, like the, well, we say that, but then here we are 9 years later. And did they really have any risk, you know? Is there anything that you would like to say as far as, you know, anybody that has information or to the person that did it? Or
I always have words for them because it was more than one.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do want to say is to the families, never lose hope. Don't give up on your loved one because you are their voice now. Continue to press, fight, you know, for justice. And to the persons that took my son's life, I'll never stop fighting. I'll never stop fighting. Never, 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 never stop fighting. I won't stop this fight until the Lord calls me home. And if he does call me home before this case is solved, he has his brother.
We'll fight for you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. And I just want him, you know, personally, I want them to know that what goes around comes around.
Mm-hmm.
And if this was to fall in your lap to where someone took your loved ones away from you, how would you feel? Mm-hmm. Took your child, you now have a child. How would you feel if somebody took your son's life? So I think, you know, you've done this, you've brought a curse upon yourself. So, you know, and sometimes the children reap what the parents have done, you know. It may not be.
I wholeheartedly agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just. you're going to get caught. Don't never think you ain't going to get caught. Don't never think you're too smart not to get caught because you will get caught.
There, one of my. I'm trying to look it up so I can get the wording right. We used it in something last year, I think. There's a quote from Martin Luther King Jr. It says, "The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice." And that is like, it is one of my favorite things to use in the podcast and on all of our stuff because I'm like, look, it can go for years, but it can't stay gone forever.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's right.
You can sweep it under the rug. You know what happens when you start sweeping stuff under the rug? It starts to pile up.
I also used to hear people say, when you sweep things under the rug, eventually you're going to trip over it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. And also, I was actually talking to an investigator friend earlier this week, and she said, can you imagine being somebody with information or in general that you haven't done or being responsible for murdering somebody, walking around carrying that for years? She said that has to be very heavy, even if you don't acknowledge it.
Uh-huh.
And can you imagine how much better someone would feel if they actually kind of unloaded that burden? And she said, I cannot imagine having a secret like that I have carried around by myself all these years.
That's right.
Because that is really heavy.
It is.
It's what I would call soul sucking.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep. That's right. It's gonna come back. Look, let me tell y'all something. It may not come tomorrow. And I always say this. It may not come next week. It may not come next year. But please believe me, it's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
It always come back. It's like the shape of the sun, the shape of the moon when it's full. It's a full circle.
Yep.
Full circle. So I say that to say this. You will be caught. You will be caught.
And yep. To me, you just can't. You got to leave the world a better place,
mm-hmm.
for your kids, mm-hmm. for the generation coming up behind us. And it's like what you said, that when you start holding on to those things, you are passing that down to the next generation, don't
mm-hmm.
you?
Mm-hmm.
And that is not even remotely fair.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That is right. So you have to be careful how you treat people.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing. You pretended to be this young man's friend, and then you turned on him. The whole time you was plotting, because that's what you are. You're a robber. You're a killer.
And wouldn't it make you think that if you were willing to do that to somebody that was so young, had their whole flipping life ahead of them, just out minding their own business,
yeah.
Doesn't it make you think that the people around you are certainly capable of doing the same thing?
Yep.
And if you're not the person
responsible,
mm-hmm. And if you're not the person responsible, but you know who is, think about... If that happened, if he's done it to somebody else, how much longer do you have?
That's right.
Usually the people that do these kinds of things surround themselves with others that do these things.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That is so true. That is so true. And y'all know there is a reward. I think it's a $5,000. Yeah, it is a $5,000 reward. With Crime Stoppers.
That's what I thought. I was going to ask you if that was still active.
It is. It is.
I'm going to put you on the spot, Erica.
Uh-huh.
Can you think of your favorite memory with him?
My favorite memory.
Or one of your favorites, if you can't think of the favorite.
Y'all may think.
I just, after all this heavy talk, I think it would be fair to share with everybody something really bright.
Yeah.
Came from him.
I was laughing at this today. Uh-oh. Y'all may call me a bad mother, but I call this a learning lesson. Was for him, his cousin, and his brother. So Rakeem had just got this car probably about 8 weeks before he was murdered. And he had just got it out the shop. So he took it upon himself in the driveway where we lived at once before was up a hill, and the front of the yard was real hilly. So whenever I wash cars, I would pull them in the back of the yard, go through the gate and pull them in the back of the yard and wash the car. So he took it upon himself, I'm finna wash the car in the front yard. So I was in my room watching I can't remember what Western I was watching, but it was really good. And I was like, the house is mighty quiet. Where are the boys at? Let me go see. what they're doing.
You know it's going to be something when you have to say, where are they?
I didn't know. Where are the boys?
Yeah. My, you know, my baby boy was probably 13, maybe, probably 13 at the time. Maybe, yeah, probably 13. Rakeem and his cousin, they're a year apart. And they like brothers stuck at the hill. So Rakeem and my dad were washing his car, and I look out the window. I said, he's washing his car in the front yard. I was like, what made him do that? Knowing that he probably gonna get stuck in the bogged down in the front yard. What made him do that? So I went back to my room. I said, he gonna learn today. I got back up, came back and looked out the window. I know my baby boy was in there playing the game at first. When I first came, peeped out the window. So I came back up. I got back up, came back and looked to see what was the progress. I see my baby boy behind the steering wheel. I see my son and his cousin pushing the car. I was like, oh God, this is going to be a disaster. So I looked the way the car was parked. I said, okay, well, it can't go down the hill. I said, if they pushing him back, the car is going to go back into a little tree that's going to automatically just stop it. So I had already aimed it out, you know, measuring it out with my eyesight. And I'm just shaking my head, just shaking my head. So I watch another man from across the yard. He came to help him push. And I'm watching my little baby boy. Instead of mashing the brakes, he mashing the gas. He hit the tree. Oh, and I'm shaking my head looking at them like, they should have known better. So I tiptoe back in my room. I hear him saying, oh my God, what we going to do? What we going to tell mama? What we going to do? I said, So I snuck back to my room, crossed my legs like I was looking at TV. Rakeem comes standing at the foot of my bed. I'm like, hey, son. Mom. I said, what? I got something to tell you. I said, what? I hit a tree with my car. I said, did you hit the tree with the car? Or did you tell brother to hit the brakes and he hit the gas? Is that what happened? Because I seen you out there. I wasn't going to say that because I wanted you to learn for yourself. Why would you put your baby brother that don't have no license, did not know how to drive? Why would you put him? Why not just tell your cousin, you get in the passenger seat since we both got license. Let the man help Rakeem push the car. And I was working today. And that memory came up in my mind. And I did the biggest laugh because I can remember that as clear as day. And I wished I could have just explained to y'all just how it was taking place by me looking at it. But I laughed so hard today, y'all, just thinking about that memory. Because I was like,
yeah. One more thing, and then we'll be able, we just needed to get a little bit to go with the beginning.
Yeah, so like what you kind of
just to do a quick update from our previous recording, you had your meeting today.
Exactly, not even that.
How you feel about it?
Right there, he got balled down. That's why he had to get somebody else. When I seen that, before I went, I learned this. But when I came back and I seen my baby boy in the car, I said, "Lord, just give me." A positive.
I'm gonna let him learn
sign.
This. He don't
this
learn
is just
this.
Going downhill.
He had to
faster.
Come in there and tell me.
Yeah.
If I want to go down here and they just tell me what I
never
know
about
here. Never.
Didn't
but
mess
I tell you,
no.
Didn't even mess with until you. Until
well,
I see different.
Baby brother didn't hit the gas too hard.
I think we have.
That's why I was like, I measured it
And also, if it was going to be an issue with him going down the hill or he hitting out,
good.
I think he's going to be a good chief of police because out of the two, I was just sitting in quietness today, and I try to have a meeting with the DA's office every year.
I was just in my office, just in
out of the
still,
last 3 years.
Close my
let's
eyes,
see, just, we had Finley,
you know, at peace,
and then we had Albert.
And that memory popped in my head, and I opened my eyes, and I just
all of that.
Out loud.
I had to commend this man because
the other two.
Chief would not even respond to an email.
No.
Period.
Always. He was a mama.
And I had looked this man in his eye.
And get in the bed, he'll bring his
and tell him, I appreciate you.
Off his
because
bed.
The other chiefs we have wouldn't have been sitting in this room, but you're here today. That lets me know that you're concerned.
He's always been like that.
That lets me know that you're concerned.
Such a sweet kid.
And D.A. Oliver,
and
she was very helpful.
That I wasn't able to.
The investigators was very helpful. I felt good leaving there.
Them talking about
good.
You know, they didn't want to say.
I'm just praying that
homicide, they were trying to say
we can come up with a solution.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah. Of his
with a solution. So
yes, he was.
I feel good about it.
Starting out.
When I tell you they're working together and they're gonna we've got an idea
down.
I think they're going
to
start from the beginning and then there's some other stuff that they is going to do.
His life already laid out what he wanted to do.
But, and I felt good. I didn't come out of there upset.
Houghton, Alabama.
I didn't come out of there with tears in my eyes.
Hardly no crying.
Although I missed my child. It's time. I'm on my ninth year.
A firefighter.
I hadn't had a good cry today.
At the time,
I had had
there
a good
were no
cry
black firefighters.
Although he was
he
on my mind all day today,
to
and the only thing
firefighter.
I could see was that bright smile.
So
he that was bright smile, and when I got in my car,
his firefighter exam.
I said, "Son, Mama, not gonna stop.
Gonna enroll in
I'm not gonna stop."
For when
I always tell him that. I'm not
so
gonna stop.
Awesome.
I'm gonna continue
that,
on.
You know,
I'm not gonna stop.
Plans.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna
and
stop.
And just think about this.
And that's what I got in that
I
that car. I said,
day,
"Son, we might be on to something."
That he
I said, "So you just hold on."
His firefighter exam.
Mama gonna keep working for you.
This child had just got off.
So I love how that feeling really did.
From 10,
very. My heart beat
from 10 to 7. But if they don't get those calls out of time enough, the shift will run over a little.
So I felt really good.
You sounded better when you called me after it. You sounded better than you have in previous conversations that we've had after
I
talked to them.
Because I'm telling y'all, I have never seen a chief of police.
And he still
out of all the invites we've seen, I've never seen a chief of police attend a meeting
to do that.
And this man was ready to go. This man had his notes. This man had his research. He's already researched my son's whole case
to get it, to take it over.
Well, that's impressive that he came in.
Yes.
Because there are so many times you talk to people, and when they do finally get that meeting, they go in and they sit down with, you know, whoever's over whatever agency or the lead investigator, and they're like, okay, tell me about it.
But you...
Like they have no clue, and they'll say, "I haven't looked at it," and maybe that's just like them. Maybe that's part of their way of questioning. Like I'm going
to
act like I don't know and see what they tell me, and if they tell me anything new or you know where they kind of go with it, maybe that is just a strategic thing. But a lot of times it's not. They really haven't looked at it. They're just like, "All right, we'll see what we learned today, and then we'll go look at the file when we get back."
I didn't even get that.
Baby boy is because
good. Oliver that went over his case, chief of police.
And
so we got the two heads.
I just hate that I wasn't able to see my eldest son. I never have grandchildren from that child. I'll never have any more birthday hugs, any more Christmas hugs, Thanksgiving hugs, Valentine's. Oh my God. Valentine's was so special. So special. He made his mother feel so good on Valentine's Day.
That was something that when I was listening back today on the way home to the first episode, we were talking about the fact that he was just always smiling.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I had a smile that was
smiling.
Oh, my God. That smile will light up a room. Yeah. Will light up a room.
He had a great smile.
Will light up a room.
I had mentioned in it, too, because, you know, we talked about that he was really big into wrestling. And my son, we took a break this year and did basketball. But we're going back to wrestling next year. Hallelujah. But I was like, God, I think about sitting at these events and watching Aiden grow. And we just went to Auburn last week and toured the campus because he'll be a senior this coming up year. And all of these things that I'm watching him grow into this just wonderful, respectable young man. And he's kind and compassionate and empathetic. And he is just, he would do anything for anybody. And I mean, all mamas love their kids, but there's a different kind of bond between a mom and a son.
To have birthed out two awesome young men, very well mannered.
I
was lucky. I gotta say, I was just lucky. Just lucky.
I can't imagine not seeing him reap the benefits of everything he's working towards. And I actually think about it all the time, especially around wrestling season. Like, Raheem was really just starting to spread his wings. Be that young adult with responsibilities. You know, it's still, he wasn't quite there yet, but like, he was stepping into that adulthood phase, and it was just snatched away from him.
Yes,
for no reason.
For no reason. I'm gonna see. I'm gonna tell y'all this. Although some days are gooder than others, I have my breakdowns, but when I tell you, I really felt it. I got married last July. And my baby boy walked me down the aisle. And I wasn't expecting this because I completely forgot about that. He said, okay, it's time for the mother and son dance. And I'm like, I got two sons. And it didn't hit me until I started dancing with my baby boy and tears just began to roll down my eyes. I got you. I said, I got you. But I don't have a brother. Tears just rolling down my eyes. All I can do is just hold my son. Just hold him.
It's not the same comfort, but he is with you.
Yeah. At that moment, although I was missing him, I felt like he was there with us. I really did, but it gets better over time. And I'm going to tell y'all something. Depression is real. Mental illness is real. I suffer from PTSD, anxiety, depression. I didn't have all this before my child died. None of this. Social anxiety. I've made my house, although you do supposed to be comfortable at home, but you're also supposed to get out and get some of that sunlight.
Yeah.
My home is my comfort. I wasn't like that at all. It's like for somebody to invite me to go somewhere, you almost have to pull my teeth to make me go because of that anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
This is trauma from what has happened to me, for what two people chose or people chose to decide for them to take, you know, a person's life in their own hands and say, okay, well, you're going to die today.
From decisions that were made that you had,
yes,
that affected you, and you had no input on those.
Absolutely.
Two people unrelated made a decision, or I say two people, I don't know. It could have been three people. It could have, who knows? Not the one page report we got is helpful there, but, you know, they made this decision.
Yeah.
He, she, whoever. Without any consideration of the ripple effect that decision would have.
Yep.
And it is, I think that's probably one of the things that makes me the most irritated when we talk about the cases that are unsolved, is that you have, it's not discriminatory. This is something that happens, and it goes back to us talking about that when something finally happens will be because it happened to somebody in a position of authority's loved one.
Mm-hmm.
But it happens to low-income families. It happens to people who have, say, higher-risk lifestyles where you could see where they might would end up in situations where this would occur. It happens to middle class. It happens to upper class. And it doesn't matter what color you are. It doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman. Everybody that is, and I say this, it's not all cases. It's not all investigators. But for the ones that we talk to, and we talk to people from all over the spectrum, they are coming up against these roadblocks. And it's like, look, I don't care what predisposition you had going into this case. I don't care what you found out. The fact of the matter is somebody is responsible for their murder, and they are walking around out there with the capability or ability, both really, they have the capability, they've done it already, and the ability to do it again.
Yep. And if they had not already done it.
Yeah. And all you're doing is giving them more encouragement to continue along that route. They've had no repercussions.
That's right. None whatsoever. Didn't do it. That's right. So I just hope, I want you to see my son's face. And I want that to convict your heart by seeing my son's face. I want you to feel real bad. I do. I really, really do. So I'm not gonna give up, y'all. Y'all just know. I'm not gonna give up. No. I'm not. I'm a leader, not a follower. I am not going to stop. I'm not.
Rakim's case remains unsolved. We are hoping that Erica can make some progress with DA Oliver and Chief Greyboys and find a resolution to his case. If you have any information, lift your burden and contact someone right away. Bring some peace to this family and to Rakim. Contact the Montgomery Police Department at 334-241-2651. the Central Alabama Crime Stoppers at 334-251-7867 or anonymously on their website. Or you can call the ACCA tip line at 251-501-COLD-2653.
Since Alabama Cold Case Advocacy's creation, we have dedicated innumerable hours to researching and networking in an effort to provide the largest platform we can to the cases we share. We shoulder all associated expenses with Alabama Cold Case Advocacy out of our own pocket, including the subscription fees for researching and production of the Unforgotten podcast, to provide a cost-free avenue for the victims' families of those cases.
We hope you will join in our efforts to raise awareness of Alabama's missing and murdered and support these families who have been forced to carry the immeasurable loss of their loved ones and the fight for answers. If you appreciate our mission and you are inspired to make a donation, your extra support will enable the ACCA to continue our research, share the cold cases, and help those families know that they are also unforgotten.
Unforgotten is an Alabama Cold Case Advocacy podcast recorded in conjunction with Riverside FM, hosted and distributed by Red Circle to your favorite podcast platforms. Content, research, artwork, and production are by Sellers and Stormy of Alabama Cold Case Advocacy. Credits for music, sound clips, special mentions, and research sources can be found in each episode's description. Your support helps us continue producing Unforgotten and further Alabama Cold Case's mission of advocacy and awareness. There are a few ways you can help us light the path. Make a one-time or monthly donation to Unforgotten through Red Circle, sign up for a one-time or recurring donation through the ACCA website, or subscribe to the Unforgotten Patreon channel for early access to ad-free episodes. You will find the links for all three in our episode descriptions. Another cost-free way to be of great help is to follow us on social media, but most importantly, whatever you do, tell everyone you know about these cases. Sharing their stories is one of the most effective ways to help find resolution for Alabama's cold cases. Be the spark. Thank you for listening, and until next time, remember, justice may be delayed, but the victims and their families remain unforgotten.
That was good. You did good on that one.
Thanks.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Hey, I'm Dr. Z, and I'm a neurosurgeon. So that means long hours, early rounds, late nights, and everything in between. And through it all, I wear FIGS. Because they're built for what I do. Through the chaos, through the hours, and through whatever the day throws at me, they do their job so I can do mine. They're comfortable when it counts, and functional when I need them the most. So where do you wear your FIGS? On shift, on call, on the couch in the break room, listening to this podcast? Wherever it is, they fit right in. And now listeners of this podcast can get 15% off their first order. Just head to wearfigs.com and use code FIGSRX at checkout. That's wearfigs.com, code FIGSRX.